are now listening to the Serious Growth Podcast with your host, Leo Costa Jr.
Welcome to Serious Growth Podcast, where the truth is told. On today's show, please welcome Rupa. Rupa, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you. How are you, Leo?
Somebody my age, doing pretty good. It's not easy getting to the souls. It's a challenge. It's another challenge, kind of like all these challenges. I'm looking at your bio and all your accomplishments, and it's quite obvious to me that you are a woman who decides to do something. You state a goal, and you just go out, and you're proactive. You do what needs to be done to get it done. Is that right?
Yeah, I'd like to think so.
Well, listen, most people don't do that. You know, you're one of those. I think I'm one of those people that do the same thing. And I pick that stuff up right away when I just, you know, reading it. It's like, okay, here's someone who, you know, and the thing about that, it's not really a big magical formula. It's a discipline that most people just don't want to really have to deal with. I'm sure as a personal trainer, you've already started experiencing this with some of your clients. You know, for somebody to compete like you did and the International Olympia, obviously it takes a certain mindset and a certain quality that just most people don't have. So, I mean, again, that was really, really obvious to me as I was reading this on your bio. And then, so you were a runner, then a rock climber. I'm thinking, okay, how did you go from runner to rock climber and why?
It actually happened, I guess it's been 13 or 14 years ago. I kind of had been wanting to try rock climbing. My kids at that time were about 12 and 6 years old. And I thought, hey, one winter break, why not, you know, introduce them to something fun and new? And so we went to an indoor rock climbing gym. And I think just instantly I was hooked. And I would say that for the next 6 months to 9 months, we were going, the three of us were going like twice a week just to climb and have fun. And after about 9 months, they kind of said, Mom, you know, I don't want to go anymore. But yeah. I just kept going. And I loved it. And I started getting better and going outdoors. And, you know, just the whole community got me hooked. And it was like a little, it was a passion, became a passion of mine.
Yeah. And the thing about that is that's one of the underlying, I think, factors in when you do stuff like this, rock climbing. Again, I don't know much about rock climbing, but I'm going to find out talking to you. But I mean, rock climbing to me, from my perspective, bodybuilding, you know, these things that are really hard and difficult to do, you have to have a passion for that, because if you don't, right. It's just a passing phase, you know?
And yeah.
So it's like your kids, you know, they like it for a while. It's like, okay, let's move on. I'm assuming that when you're climbing, at least initially, you're tethered. Is that correct?
There's different disciplines of climbing. There's something called bouldering where you climb shorter boulders without a rope, but you have something underneath you like pads to soften a fall.
Yeah.
But then when you're climbing larger cliffs, you are you're doing what they called sport climb, where you are protecting yourself by clipping in your rope as you ascend the climb.
Oh, okay.
So if you clip in here and you climb above your last clip, your fall is just shortened and you're protected from hitting the ground, basically.
Obviously, the clip that you're, you know, putting ahead of time, tell exactly how does that work? I mean, are you putting something into the rock in between like two rocks, or how does that work?
Yeah, we could probably do a whole podcast on that, but the short mini story is, there's traditional climbing where you're placing cams and bolts into cracks and placement already, which I kind of don't do a whole lot of that. I do what's called sport climbing. There's bolts and hangers already pre-drilled into the rock.
You take a
quick draw, which is a carabiner webbing and then another carabiner, and you clip one of the ends of the draw into that bolt or that hanger. Yeah. And then you clip the rope that you're tied into onto the bottom of that, the bottom carabiner of that. And so and their placements are about 6 feet apart usually.
Yeah.
When people are bolting routes directly into the rock. So
I assume they do, often they check those to make sure they're all like nice and
smooth. Yeah, they get replaced just to make sure that the hardware is still safe. So
I didn't know that was the case. You know, I'm just thinking, okay, you go up there and you start throwing your rope up there and your fingernails and hang on and go for it. I mean, I know there's maybe some of the people that do that. Like that, but
we'll have to go through that whole process too. Actually, wow. My husband has bolted routes before, and he's gotten me to bolt a route before, so that's been an experience. So
you've done it from that side of it too, then.
I have, I'm not excited to do more of it just because it was pretty hard work, but
yeah,
I like climbing routes.
I would think that might be a good thing to do is learn it from that, you know, that side of it. Why not? You know,
it's always good to like have that experience for sure. And then you could decide whether you want to do more of it or not.
Yeah. Exactly. So did you start weight training and yoga to help your rock climbing, or was it for health and well-being?
Yoga came after, rock climbing was pretty hard on my body. I actually injured my shoulder. And as I was rehabbing out, my physical therapist said, try yoga. I started doing yoga, soon became a yoga instructor. And, so now I am a certified yoga instructor. Weight training came just 2 years ago for me in 2017. Like you mentioned at the earlier conversation, getting old isn't easy. Mm-hmm. I, at 42, I know I'm a bit younger than you are right now, but at 42, you know, I was just, I'm an athlete, an active athlete. And I was just wondering why the heck my body, like things in my body were still like, not as hard or softening. And I was not having any part of that. So I thought, well, let me try, you know, weight training and see how that works. So I got myself a personal trainer, which I do recommend anybody's just starting out should do so that they learn, you know, exactly what they're doing.
Right.
And then I had no intention of ever competing, ever stepping on a stage, ever parading around in a little bikini, but somehow after about 2 months into training, when I started noticing, differences just in 2 months, I got motivated to give that a shot. So in 16 weeks from my start of training, I stepped on stage.
Yeah. That's pretty amazing. And I think some of that has to do with the fact that you were, you know, a rock climber. I mean, you're obviously to do that, you have to be an athlete, you know? So stepping on and doing this, even though it's, you know, specifically it's different, it ties into you were conditioned to a degree to begin with. So this actually is.
I had a different start for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I hear backstage all the time when I'm competing in bikini comps. So I hear people saying, I've lost 60 pounds. I've lost 80 pounds. I've lost 100 pounds. And that just amazes me. It's very, very impressive. Yeah. For me, I was an athlete before. My starting point was, a 19.5 body fat percentage, which was okay, which is still pretty good. And then in those 16 weeks, I actually got to cut that in half.
Really?
So that's kind of where I stepped on stage.
By the way, looking at you on camera, your arm and your shoulder looks amazing. Seriously, that's not the bad shoulder. Is that the bad shoulder or is that the good shoulder?
No, this one was a bad shoulder, but now it's good. It's all good now.
Yeah, you look really good. So you've climbed all over the world. What's your favorite climb as of today, would you say? Are there many of them?
That's a good question. I mean, I guess my favorite climb is whatever I'm projecting at the moment.
Yeah.
Which means whatever I'm working on or goaling. Like at the right this moment, I don't have a specific climb that has me obsessed. But I'm looking for that next project for me to kind of get obsessed over. I love having a goal and then just breaking it down into manageable, doable pieces. And then, you know, just knocking those little mini goals off the list so I can accomplish the bigger goal. So yeah.
I like the words that you use, obsessed. I love that. You know, the nonverbal stuff or the verbal stuff that people say is just, I tie into stuff like that. You know, I'm I've had studios, training studios for 38 years, you know, and a part of me being, I think, a really good trainer is to really pay attention and be aware of the client, you know, verbally and nonverbally, because, you know, maybe you know this, sometimes, you know, 60% of communication is nonverbal. And so you got to pay attention to make sure that the verbal and nonverbal is congruent. And a lot of times it's not. So I'm really tied in when people are talking, you know, like some of the words that you're using, I think those are powerful. You're obsessed about it. I understand that, you know, to do the stuff that you're talking about. And I know from my own bodybuilding days, you have to be obsessed. I just talked to somebody about that the other day. You know, it's you're actually temporarily imbalanced because it's hard to be balanced, you know, so which makes it really hard for anybody that's around you that doesn't really understand, because you have to go into this rabbit hole or this mindset where you're obsessed and, you know, nothing is going to stop you. I feel you in a really big way. I can relate.
Yeah. But
what kind of mindset and training regimen must you have? I want to get to the weight training and you're competing, but I'm really fascinated by your rock climbing.
Yeah,
what kind of a mindset and regimen, training regimen, must you have in your sport of rock climbing, you think?
I think, well, it depends. So if you're, for me, when I'm goal-oriented or obsessed with a specific climb, I go out there and do an assessment run of it. So I'll learn what I need to do in my body. I'm 4'10". So unlike most climbers that are in the 5'8" to 6 foot range, mm-hmm. I have to kind of figure out how my body's gonna scale up that wall using the tools and my strengths. So I do an assessment run, and then where I figure out how I'm gonna do it, then I train those specific movements and I build that muscle memory. And then I also work on my endurance or power endurance for climbing, by just getting a lot of mileage in, and depending on the route, like if I need, if it's smaller holds and I need to build my finger strength, I'll add that into my training regimen. If there's a lot of, going upside down, I'll be working, which is typically the kind of climbs that I, gravitate towards. I love more of the overhanging cave kind of climbing, mm-hmm. where you're kind of scaling upside down.
Wow.
That's kind of my favorite. Yeah. So I will train core or, you know, different aspects of the shoulders and back to get into that. So most of the training for climbing is on the wall, making movements, learning body and technique. And then also, nowadays I accompany it with the weight training aspects as well.
Yeah. One of my questions is there an ideal, cause like in sport, you know, like a jockey needs to be really small on a horse. Now I would think, just based on what you said, I'm gonna see if I can guess right. I would think that the ideal for a climber would be to be a little bit taller because they can take bigger steps or bigger climbs, make bigger moves. But I don't know if that's the case or not. Would that be the case?
There are certain routes that lend themselves better to a taller climber for sure. Mm-hmm. And occasionally I find something that fits my body and my size as well.
Yeah.
So those are the typical climbs that I'll kind of go after. But what I would say is really important for climbers is your strength to weight ratio. Mm-hmm. So how the bigger bodybuilders will bulk up and gain mass and gain weight, not so good always for climbing. So there's a very, I stay in the bikini category, although I was told I could move up to figure, I kind of want to stay leaner. I want to not add a lot of mass to my legs, just because I think that having that kind of makes it more difficult for me to climb. For example, when I started weight training and building out my glutes, my whole balance of my body changed. Mm-hmm. So to offset that, I would have to just train a little bit more core and a little bit more back and the shoulders to offset that imbalance that I had created. Yeah. But I love both the sports and I love competing and I love that body. So I'm going to continue to work on that, but I'm also going to tippy toe finally maintaining that balance so I can still climb.
Well, the thing that's nice about this is that because your body is, you know, you're an artist and your body is a block of clay. It's just your, what some of the things that you're talking about here, which is very smart. One of my backgrounds is in sports specific training. So I've trained athletes from different sports. And of course, not only do they play different sports, but there's different positions of sport.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have to set up a program based on the position of that particular sport.
And the skill set they need, right?
That's right. Yeah. And you know, the way you're explaining things and the way you're, you know, getting your body ready for certain, you're being very specific to a goal. And that's hugely important. You know, just like you said, if you're a bodybuilder with too much mass, that's not specific and you're not going to put yourself in the best spot to be able to excel. You know, so you're very smart in the way you're setting up that program, you know, very much the same way that what I do with other athletes. That's very cool. What are the ABS Nationals? What does that stand for?
American Bouldering. Sorry, I'm lost my S for a second. But it's basically
so it's an organization.
Series, maybe it's series. Yeah, so it's the national organization in the U.S. For rock climbers for bouldering. So not rope climbing, basically bouldering.
Oh, okay. This is a crazy question. Are there any do rock climbers like race each other up mountains? Is that a discipline that they do?
It kind of, so I don't know if you knew, but just the rock climbing is going to be in the 2020 Olympics actually. And so the way that they're doing that is they added three disciplines, bouldering, sport climbing and speed climbing. But it's the same route that two people go up for the speed climb piece. So they do race each other for that. So that is one of the aspects that's been in, is going to be part of the Olympics for 2020. I don't know if you've ever heard, but there's a speed record for doing the nose on El Cap. There's people that just do it for fun. Uh-huh. Right now, the current record for doing the nose, for example, is under 2 hours in Yosemite, which is unbelievable, to tell you the truth. So
yeah. So then, when you're, I'm just really focusing on this racing thing because it sounds like it's so dangerous to do that. But when they're racing, are they racing like side by side, or is it like you go first? You know, I'll see how fast I can go up, or you can go up, and then I see.
Yeah.
Is that the way it goes?
For the outdoors, it's just timed. For the indoor competitions, they're side by side.
Oh, side by side. Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because there would be, if you were going to go first, I would rather have you go first. You know, and that way I can see how fast I really have to go. I was hoping that you were going to tell me it's a side by side deal. Seems like it's more fair that way. So now that you've decided your weight training, I'm really kind of curious. You know, obviously the passion has to be there for that. So why did you decide that you just wanted to compete? Was it just like, it sounds interesting, I think I'm going to try it? Or did somebody talk you into it? Tell us about that.
For the bikini competitions, yeah. Weight training. My coach at the time, my trainer at the time was telling me, you should really do it. You should really do it. You do really well. And then I think after I noticed, you know, the changes that, and I was kind of getting proud of myself and I'm like, well, why not? Let's give it a try. Yeah. So I did one. My first one was in March of 2018, which was last year. And then I did five more in 2018 and then a total of four this year.
Wow. I'm amazed. I had somebody else on the show. I think it was actually the guy that won the Olympia, Ricardo. Did you
meet him? Yeah.
And you know, these guys, like you, they're competing four and five times in the year. And I'm thinking, how in the heck do you do that? I mean, when I was competing in the 90s, if we did two shows, that was enough. You know, it was kind of like, but it sounds to me, you know, for you to be able to compete that way, you've stayed pretty close to being show ready. And, you know, there's not a lot, because if you're having to bring up some dragging body parts, because look, part of your being in a bikini show, I would imagine, but they didn't have bikinis when I was competing, Rupa. So, you know, this is kind of new to me still. And yet I've trained bikini girls, but how much of the score that you get is based on symmetry? Do they talk about stuff like that with you girls?
They say it's part of the criteria. I haven't actually seen, and this is one of the things that I wanted to do in 2020 is actually volunteer to test judge.
Yeah.
Because I think learning from that point of view would be really helpful as a competitor. Yeah. They do say symmetry plays a role, but I don't know what the weight of that is. I've been fortunate to get the most symmetrical award through the IMBA twice.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that how important or how big of a deal that was at the time, but like kind of looking back, I'm like, that's because it was not one for female, one for male. It was one for all of the competitors. So
yeah,
it was kind of amazing.
Well, and the thing about that is in that sense, you're pretty lucky, because somebody like myself, for example, I wasn't as symmetrical as what you're talking about. So I needed an off season to correct the weaknesses, you know, and it was hard for me to compete, you know, every other, I mean, you're competing what, every couple months or something like that?
Yeah.
So, you know, when you're somebody that needs to correct some dragging body parts, 2 months is not enough. I mean, you need an off season to do that, you know, but when you're lucky to have the symmetry like you do, that's a little different story, you know. Do you find that when you're competing so far, are the judges pretty, you know, are they pretty consistent about how they're judging you? Or do you find that when you have different judges, they're looking for different kind of nuances? How does that work for you that you've seen?
I believe that it's not consistent. I wish it was a little bit more consistent, which is why I kind of want to do the other side of that, where I do become a test judge or maybe a judge in the future, because I'd like to see, but it all depends on what they're looking for. Maybe a little bit harder, maybe a little bit softer. So I've been told, you know, I've come in too hard and I've been not scored well on that. Or if I had any muscle striation show, I've been scored poorly on that before. Whereas in my mind, I'm thinking, well, it's a bodybuilding competition, so muscle shit show, but you know, it just depends.
I would imagine. I mean, I think the sport, because it's subjective to begin with, I think there's a little bit of issue with that anyway, but I think even more so sometimes in the women's categories, you know, it's been like that. Even like when I was competing, we had, the girls were competing, and it always was like they didn't really know how, the judges really didn't know how they were judging on a consistent basis the girls, you know, because what you're saying sounds to me like that you should be, based on the on their feedback to you, is that maybe you should have been in the figure or physique as opposed to the bikini. That would be my perspective on that. Maybe I'm wrong.
I had that first thought before as well, but I really don't think I'm large enough to compete in the muscular, you know, muscular, you know, like having the lats and the same shape that the, some of those girls have to do that. And I kind of, for me, I still like the bikini category. I do like the posing a little bit better as well. And the shape of the body and the fact that it's still a little bit closer and leaner. And the strength to weight ratio I can maintain with that type of body.
Yeah, which actually fits for your rock climbing as well, too. So
right.
Makes sense. Yeah, interesting. Now, there was, I know that from my own days of competing, we started learning the judges, like the shows that you went to, there was a certain group of judges sometimes that you'd run across, and then you already knew going into the show what they were looking for. And you could actually, you know, get your body ready for that sort of that line of judges, which, I mean, I guess that's when you get to that point, you have enough control, you know, that you really can make your body look almost the way you want. But at the same time, it's like, well, you know, I have a certain body and I like to keep it at a certain way. And you, like you mentioned, you might run across a group of judges that say, well, I'm going to mark you down for that, you know, which is a little bit disheartening. Do you stay away from, I mean, do you pick shows that are just at random, or do you pick shows according to maybe the judges that are going to be there?
No, I don't pick the shows based on the judges. I don't really know who might show up to judge typically. So I don't pick the shows based on that.
Yeah, just curious about that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Okay, so you said you and your information that you offer meal guidance. And so who does this pertain to mostly?
So the most of my clients have been people that already do personal training with me. And then I've had an influx or a group of clients that have been doing yoga with me who have taken me up on that offer because they wanted to lose weight or learn how to eat differently. And I've seen that they, once they stick to that, I've seen people lose 10, 12, 15 pounds of body fat while maintaining muscle or gaining muscle. So that's, and it's just about kind of tweaking and helping them learn, you know, how to measure food or how to eat for their activities or, you know, just kind of lifestyle, helping them build a lifestyle they can maintain. So it's not so strict that, you know, like a bikini competitor would fall under while they're in comp prep, but it gives them a good set of guidelines where they can maintain a good, healthy lifestyle.
So how did you learn about nutrition?
Well, when I was doing my personal training with my coach, when I started, I learned quite a bit. And I ended up really kind of geeking out on all the numbers and macros. And at that point in time, I started tracking everything I ate. And then I would track by week how that impacted my muscle mass and my body fat for my body.
Yeah.
And I would just make adjustments and tweaking it a little bit to see how it affected my performance and then my body as well. And then I went on to get my athlete nutrition cert through ISSA to really kind of dive deep on that.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I'm picking up on you, which I totally relate to, I have a mindset of, I call it to the nth degree. Everything to the minute degree. I want to know everything about it. You know, when it comes to training, I want to know why. I usually do it on myself over and over again. As a personal trainer, I found that to be hugely valuable. I mean, I started out as someone who started competing, and then I transitioned into, well, you know, passing that information forward, which is very much what you're doing. But I wanted to make sure that when I work with people, that I already did this on my own. You know, a lot of times, and because there's a lot of ways to skin the cat, as we know.
Yeah.
And you have that same mentality, the way you're talking about tracking calories, and that you just wanted to be, you call it geeky, being geeky about it. But I assume that's what you mean. So the, okay, so what's your stance on, as far as making changes and everything, what's your stance on protein intake? Do you have one?
So for me personally, in my body, I kind of excel when my protein intake is in the 45 to 50% of my calorie range. But it depends. I'm pretty active and I'm pretty hard on my body. And I play around with the carbs when I need extra carbs for performance or for climbing or things like that.
Yeah.
And then for my clients, I depended on their lean body mass and the amount of activities that they're doing and how intense their activities are. So,
and the protein intake that you, the protein that you eat, is it meat based? Is it, how are you getting your protein?
Yeah, it's all over the place. It's everything. So I get my protein primarily from meat. But I do have plant-based options that I incorporate into my diet. Like seitan is one of my favorites, and tofu. I do lentils. I think they're just good for you. But the right ratio of carbs that they have are high. So it's not like the bulk of my diet comes from lentils. So
Yeah. How many calories are you taking daily?
Right now, I just came off of comp season. So I'm at about 12 to 1300.
That's your off season, more your off season.
Yeah, you got to remember, I'm like 4'10 and yeah. I'm only like 90 pounds.
Right.
So I don't need, you know, a 2000 calorie diet.
Yeah, for sure. So. Have you heard of that show called, I just saw it. It's a kind of a show / documentary. It's called The Game Changers.
I have, yeah.
Have you seen that show?
I have, yeah. I saw it. I was talking about it.
I just saw that show over the weekend, and I'm big into, you know, like you, into nutrition. One of the things that struck me about that was it was good that they you know, they trotted out these doctors and athletes and all that kind of stuff. But I just didn't think that they really gave a full view of, they were really slanting towards the obviously the plant-based protein, you know, more superior than the meat protein. And, you know, it's okay. We have our own ideas and our own opinions about stuff like that. But the one thing that struck me, Rupa, was that they never talked about, we have two energy metabolisms. We have a free fatty acid metabolism. That's the one that when you're doing the keto or the, you're probably too young. Dr. Atkins, I don't know if you remember that diet, the Atkins diet, keto. I did. I wrote a book with Dr. Mauro DiPasquale, who's done the keto ketogenic diet. Well, those are all the common theme among those is that they flip your metabolism to where your body is burning free fatty acids, fat for energy first. And one of the things that they didn't talk about, they did these studies on these athletes, if you remember, and they gave one or two of the athletes the meat and one the, or vice versa. And then they said, oh, based on the blood workup, you can see that there's cloudy, you know, from the fats that are floating around in your body. And I thought, well, that's really interesting. That makes sense to me because your body in that mode is a glucose metabolism. So it's utilizing that energy system first. You know, so I thought, well, it would have been fairer in my mind, which I'm always questioning everything, you know,
right.
And I like to talk about that, whether I'm right or wrong, it doesn't matter. I really want to understand that. So I thought that would have been a little more fair if they just would have said, okay, now you guys, now let's go ahead and put you on a free fatty acid diet. Let's see how that looks, you know? And so that struck me as interesting. And I wasn't sure if I thought it was a pretty good, interesting. Would you call that a documentary? They called it a show or a movie, but I thought it was pretty interesting. But, you know, and that's the problem in the industry. And this is part of the reason why I decided to come back after a 13 or 14 year layoff. Because I just, you know, I was really heavy into this thing back in the early 90s. And then I just, you know, I got out of it and started doing other stuff. I've always been in the industry as personal training people and that kind of stuff, but not as a bodybuilder. And so I came back after a 13-year layoff. But I started seeing some of the information that's out there. And it really started irritating me because I just feel like, and again, this is my opinion, social media, I think, sometimes has actually done a disservice to the people that are reading about nutrition and exercise. And it seems to me that so many of the social media stars, I call them, that they really don't understand this on a level like you do and like I do. And I think that's a huge disservice and even dangerous to unsuspecting clients, you know? And it kind of bothers me, and actually it does more than bother me. It irritates the hell out of me. So that's why I'm back. And when I came to that event, that's the first event I've done since the late.
Oh, the Lateral Olympia was your first time back?
Yeah, I've been out of it. So when I decided, I'm kind of like you, I stated a goal. It's like, okay, I'm going to get back in again. Okay, I want to go play again out there. I don't want to compete anymore. I'm done with that. Okay, I've got my fill. I know I'm not going to do that anymore. But that what I want to do now is pass information forward and teach people still, because I do that at my studio. You know, I have trainers that work in the studio, but I'm still in it. I still love this stuff. And it matters to me when I see stuff that's just not right. And me coming back out is going to make any difference necessarily, but I got back in with the podcasting. So this is like our 21st or 22nd podcast now that we're doing, you know, and the whole point of this was just to start talking to people like yourself because I get the sense, and I know talking to you, that you're one of the people that you're legit. Okay. I know this stuff, and you can pick up on that. If you know the information yourself, you can pick up on it when you talk to other people, whether or not they know their stuff or not, you know? And so getting back into it, you know, and then coming back out and, you know, to start educating people and understanding what's going on in the industry. I don't know. I just think that there needs to be more of you, your type of mentality that's out there to really help somebody. And it sounds like you're doing that with your people. The athletes that you're working with, are they mainly the people that are competing, your athletes, or do you have
mainly the people that I'm working with are just people to looking to change lifestyle or get fit. Yeah. You know, they just want to improve the quality of their life. I'm not working with anybody who's in the competition circuit, as of now, at least. So if they change their mind and they wanted to, we'd do it together and, you know, it'd be figured out. So
yeah, they'd be in good hands with you, I can tell. So what's more difficult, you think, rock climbing or training for the bikini competition at that level that you're at?
That's a good question. I don't know. It depends. They both have some hard times, you know, like difficult challenges or obstacles to get through. So I'm not going to be able to choose one of those as more difficult than the other. There's an element of risk with climbing, that you have to be super, like, you know, very safe and just know what you're doing. And know your partner and, you know, take some precautions. And I guess, you know, even with weight training or choosing what you use in your body or how hard you push yourself, there's always risks there for injury or whatever, but I don't know. I would say with bikini competitions, as most things, the hardest part is usually, the final weeks of your diet and how you manage that could be a challenge. So
that's the thing. That was the thing for me that was always really interesting is that, you know, in that last week, you could do all this prep coming into that, and that last week can be a game changer as far as make or break. Crazy, huh? Your body is so finely tuned, and then you throw in a little stress and, you know, I mean, especially when you're early on competing, but there's always that, you know, and oh my goodness, I couldn't believe how many times that last week was make or break. I mean, your body is so finely tuned that if you take in too much salt or, you know, depending on what you do for that last minute to really fill yourself out. That was always the
last 2 weeks I competed on, December 7th. So I had a peak week leading into December 7th. And then I had a comp on 12/14 just a few days ago. Yeah. So the back-to-back peak weeks, I had never done that before. And that was challenging for sure.
So which show did you come in looking better at, do you think, of those two?
12/14. Yeah, this is last Saturday. I think out of the last 2 years of competition, my best physique I brought to the 12/14 show.
And what do you think that is?
I just think I don't know. It could have been just the right circumstances. Maybe the two peak weeks in a row. I don't know. It could have been, sometimes I just don't know what kind of impacts it, but you know, it's been a building process over the last 2 years. And so it kind of makes sense to me that, every show I should feel or look better than the one. That's the goal, at least, you know, is to come in better every show. So
One of the things that I learned was when I came in my best shape was when I was, the body likes repetition. And then what a lot of athletes did, at least back then, was that they do this off-season training. And then when they did their pre-contest training, and then there was that last week, they started doing things in that last week that they didn't do throughout any part of their regimen, you know, like carb loading, carb depletion.
Oh, so
they did that all at the very, like, the last day or so, you know, Well, the body, you didn't know how the body was going to respond. And so one of the things that I learned, because what I like to try to be able to do is to replicate or reproduce a result. That's why I was asking you which show did you come looking better at, and then try to figure out, okay, now, well, how did I do that? Because if I want to do that again, you know, there's got to be some elements of that, what you did, that you need to kind of take forward, I would imagine, and then see if we could improve on that.
Yeah.
But I just think that sometimes, you know, and that's, I learned from a really, I don't know if you've heard a guy named Tom Platz. He was called the Golden Eagle back in the days. Anyway, he was sort of the guy that guided me during my days. You know, he's a pro. And, you know, what he told me to do was, and what you do is, he said, document everything, how you feel that day, how much cardio, every little possible thing, because that's your roadmap that you're going to look back on at some point, maybe for the next show, because you're saying, but you really don't know in some ways what you did. So I find that kind of.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that I do have is I do have my average of carbs, fat, protein, sugar, fiber, and what I ate that week documented for the last 2 years. And my average calories. So when I see, wow, when I did this for 2 weeks, I took down my body fat by 3% or whatever it was. Then I go back and I look at what I did and how much I ate and all of that. One thing I probably should start doing is actually adding in, like you said, how did you feel? You know, how much cardio did you do? So maybe that's
And then one of the things that happened to a really top pro back in when I was competing, his name is Samir Benoud. I don't know if he's still around. He's a Lebanese bodybuilder. The guy was a great bodybuilder, but at the very end, he get really nervous. And from him being stressed out from one day to the next, he would be razor sharp the day before the event, but then he'd get all stressed out. Of course, your body starts producing cortisol. And it made him smooth on stage. And he looked great before and after. And he just couldn't get past that, you know?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was really, I felt bad for the guy because he was he had a beautiful physique, but you know, that just goes to show you how important all those factors can be.
Right. Yeah, all the reactions in your body.
Yeah, it's crazy, huh? And then I find what's really powerful and interesting is that the mindset that you have to have has to be such that you can actually control that. I mean, it's really important. It was important for me to have somebody like a Tom Platz who had been there and done that as a pro to help me compartmentalize that, because otherwise that stuff can kind of get away from you, you know?
Yeah.
You know, you learn with experience, obviously, as you compete. You're so young into this sport and you've had so much success. But, you know, down the road, if you keep doing this, you're going to look back and, you know, you start figuring this thing out. And even with that being said, you know, for you to come in looking as good as maybe you did on 12-14, it may take you a while to do that. I mean, I doubt it, but, you know, but it could. And that's when you have to start getting even more, you know,
fine-tuned, yeah.
Yeah, fine-tune that. It's really fascinating. When you're competing up there, because I'm not really paying attention, you go up there, are you guys I know you're being judged in mandatories, but do you have a segment to where you go out where they're just judging you alone?
Yes, typically in most competitions, you get to come out and present your posing routine where you're showing off your personality, your confidence, your best angles, and your physique, and your overall presentation. And then based on that, you get to, they'll pick you out of the lineup on whether you're get to do the mandatories in a side-by-side format. This year at the Natural Olympia, we did not get to do that. They did a single show format, and I think they're still reworking how they want that to work. So they actually lined all 20 plus girls up and then tried to pick out the top five from there. Not sure that was the best way. I do like the other way where you get to come out individually first and show your personality, yeah. your confidence, your overall package, your best angles, with the judge's eyes. You know, you're the only one up there at the time. Yeah. So they get, you got a captive audience where you can really just make that one-on-one eye contact and, you know, draw them in. I like that format a little bit better. And then come out and do your side-by-side comparisons with everybody else.
Well, I tell you what, I totally agree with you because, you know, what I was amazed at this, again, mind you, I haven't been at one of these shows. The one last show that I did was an Arnold Classic, I think, or the other Olympia, as they call that, and back in the end. And so I was flabbergasted at how the competitors, they look fantastic, man. And on top of that, to be natural, you know, I started out as a natural athlete, and for different reasons, I just made a choice to, in order to keep competing, well, you know, I went that other route. And I was just so amazed at the quality of the caliber of competition that was there. And you were in a large group of people, and I think you're 100% right. I think it's a lot more fair if you, even if they had one or two girls coming out at a time, but not 20 of you guys, you know, how in the world is that going to happen? You know, I guess, you know, I guess they're playing, it sounds like they're playing around with that to see what
you think. Yeah, I've already given that feedback, and they're so receptive to feedback, the organization. And so, you know, they totally get it. And, you know, they're still playing around with that one show format, how to make it so that you're not also there till 1 or 2 a.m.
Yeah, right. That's the other thing.
Some of the shows, a lot to consider.
Yeah, some of the shows I was in, it was like a nightmare. It was like a, you know, a marathon. It was like, oh, God, you know, I'm going to compete either first at the beginning of the event because I don't want to compete at 9 o'clock at night. That's for sure.
Yeah.
You know, but,
and it wants to hold your form.
Yeah, that's exactly right. When you come out, like when you're in that format where you come out on your own, back in my days, we had to choreograph a routine, the music. Now, did you have to choreograph a routine, or do they have a music playing in the background, and then you just come out and show your different poses?
For my category, you do not have to have a routine choreographed that way to music. They play my music in the background, and you go through your, I think it's 45 seconds of posing, so you can show your best angles.
We used to have like it was a minute and a half. That was our program. We had a minute and a half to show our stuff, you know, and then you would do like the mandatories. And that was kind of the format back then. So I did notice that there were some categories where it seemed like the choreographed routine wasn't something that they had to do. It was just more, how did you learn? How did you learn how to pose to be able to maximize the right angles and minimize maybe one that's not so friendly to the judges?
Well, when I first started, the personal trainer that I started with was Arlene Padilla. She taught me initially how to pose, and I used that, but then I started looking up posing online. I reached out to several other competitors and coaches for posing feedback, because I just figured I'd want as much feedback as possible, because everybody has a different opinion, and maybe one of those actually resonates with me and I can incorporate different things into my own routine. So I just wanted to learn from as many people as possible. I'm continuing to learn as well. Like even as of a few months ago, I got a new posing coach who's the one who actually, Jennifer Mallow, who's the one who actually convinced me to do the NPC comps in December, these last two after the Olympia. Because after Olympia, I was kind of ready to have an off season and enjoy the holidays. But then I'm like, I can hang in for three more weeks. And so I'm glad I did. It was a lot of fun.
And where did you compete at the NPC? Where was that being held?
San Diego was Tournament of Champions.
Oh, yeah.
Contest.
Familiar with that. Yeah.
And then this last Saturday was in LA at the Westin. It was their inaugural Masters USAs. We had people fly in from all over the US to compete in the Masters. So it's only like there are 35 plus Masters and you're 40 plus. plus masters for bikini, figure, and physique, men's and women's.
How did you do at those events?
So I competed in 40 plus. So for Tournament of the Champions for my class, I took, I came in first, first place. And then for the 35 plus, that was the 40 plus. And for, I did the 35 plus as well. I came in third. And for the unlimited or open against all ages, I came in fifth for my class.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, thank you. And then, I'm 44, so, I'll take it. And then for this last weekend, I only competed in 40 plus category, and I took third. So I'm pretty pleased. I'm not saying that that's the end of my career, and I'm not going to strive for more. But given that it was my second NPC for the year, the competition was pretty hard. I was in my class A for my height category. Which is up to 5'1". There's 12 girls alone just in my class, which is one of the larger classes as well.
Yeah. So. Listen, you know, when you're competitive, you want to win. That's just the way it is, you know. But the truth of that, and I know this from being around the game long enough, you get in the top five, you're way miles ahead. I mean, you're such a youngster, really, in the competition world with the bikini competing, but. Fantastic. Congratulations on that. I want to switch back now to your rock climbing again. I'm just really fascinated with that. I'm going to, based on our conversation now, I'm going to guess that, the question would be, how long does it take to train for a rock climb? And you're going to probably tell me, well, it depends on the rock climb. And so there, I'm assuming that, what is your longest rock climb that you do? And then like the shortest one? Because I would say, in track terms, one is going to be a sprint, sort of, and then one's going to be an endurance, more of endurance. So, you know, how long does it take to get ready for these rock climbs like this?
So I think the better way to, or the better question would be like the hardest climb that I've ever climbed and how long did that take me? So in climbing, they have grades of difficulty. So an easy climb, you know, is rated, let's just say for sport climbing, it's like 5.50 or 5.2 or 5.6 or something like 5.6. And then you have all the way up to, I think, 5.15. So the hardest thing I've ever done was is 5.13. And then they have letter grades after that, 5.13A. The first time I did a 5.13A, a really powerful route that took me four seasons, so almost about 4 years to come back and finish clean. So from top to bottom without taking any falls. And then the last one took me, last 513A, I did in about a year. And that was in 2018 while I was doing competition prep and I was still learning how to adjust my diet and my body for climbing and for competition. So, and at the same time, I was also still trying to do my one arm pull-up goal. So I had a lot of competing priorities at once. And so
it's hard for you. Yeah, it's hard for you. I mean, your body is fantastic in that it can multitask, but it doesn't multitask most efficiently, as you know. You know, so for you to be doing all those things was you're making it even more difficult. Yeah, when you're climbing like that, does it take you an hour, 30 minutes, 4 hours?
To finish a climb?
Yeah.
The ones that I typically pick are not that long, maybe anywhere between a 12-minute to 20-minute climb.
Yeah.
So the ones I kind of choose. In the climbing world, I think more, I'm more of a fast twitch muscle girl, and so I gravitate towards more powerful shorter climbs with bursts of power versus a long endurance-y route. That's just kind of my preference.
Yeah, and again, that's smart. You know, back when I was in Bulgaria years ago, the way they trained their athletes, I trained with the Olympic teams over there, the East Bloc, Bulgaria, Russia, Czechoslovakia at the time. And the Bulgarians were amazing. And what they would do is they would draw blood out of their athletes. These are young athletes. And they would, between the blood draw that they did And they would put the young athletes in just games that they were having them play. The athletes had no idea as to what they were doing. They were just playing games. But what these coaches were doing, they were Olympic coaches, based on the games that these children were playing, they could determine whether or not they were fast twitch versus slow twitch muscle fiber. So in the big picture, then, because back then it was different, you know, these kids all went to a school to train, and then they had school there as opposed to the way we do it here. Okay. And so those coaches would, again, they would start directing those athletes into the sports that they would excel in. You know, that's how specific they were. Wow. It was crazy. And like I said, the stuff that you've learned is so instinctive because you figured out that you're a slow twitch athlete. And if you go and do these endurance climbs, you won't do as well as you're doing because it lines up more with your body. That's so,
right.
People do that, you know, that's pretty interesting. So what do you think is the weak link of your body as it relates to rock climbing? If I was to guess, I would say your hand strength.
For me, I actually have a pretty good finger strength. And being small, my fingers are small, so I gravitate towards smaller holds as well. So fingertips. My weakness would be I do have, I developed arthritis in the fingers. Mm-hmm. And so I have a limited time, like where I could push on that threshold on the joints before it becomes a little bit too painful to climb. So I do climb smaller holds, but maybe not as long of a duration until that pain's kind of sets in. I would say the weak part of my climbing where I don't do like very much of is like slab climbing, which is using more of your body weight over your feet. And it's instead of being overhung, we're climbing like this.
Yeah.
It's more like you're climbing like this. And endurance. So longer climbs, like what I was mentioning earlier, are just not my favorite thing. I'd rather do shorter, powerful.
With your fingers and having some arthritis like that, so how do you train to overcome that? You train other body parts to overcompensate for maybe your weak link? Because obviously, I mean,
I developed arthritis, I had to also start developing other styles of strengths in my climbing. For example, holding on to more rounded climbers holds where you're using more wrist and tension here, or compression where you're squeezing maybe two things, or pinch strength where you're grabbing this way. So different styles of climbing I learned to develop. And after I learned that, you know, I can only do so much with small holds and crimp, it's called crimping when you're holding smaller holds.
You either adapt or you die. You know, you figure out a way to keep adapting. I can tell that. How big a role does mindset play in your rock climbing?
100%. 100%. Like it's a huge part of climbing. You have to, and then maybe that's why I like it so much. You have to be 100% present in that moment. Yeah.
That was one of the things that drew me. I mean, I was an athlete. I played football and the regular sports, you know, baseball and basketball. But one of the things that drew me to bodybuilding was that it was so darn hard to be able to do that sport. It was unforgiving, you know, and then to look right on stage. Most people don't realize. I mean, you have a little bit of a benefit because your symmetry is such, but, you know, to look really good on stage, I mean, you had to be, like, you talk about being present, but that's exactly what drew me to that sport because it was so darn hard. That it's like, oh, yeah, I can do this, you know, and it takes years. It took years for people to get up on stage at a high level, you know, but that was part of the journey was doing that. You know, I loved that. And then it was a big suffer fest, but I loved it. Sick in the mind, I guess. Something's wrong with me. How big a role does strength play? We're talking about power and strength, but how big a role does strength play?
I think it plays a big role as well. I think it's about your strength to weight ratio and your body and the climb that you're doing. So some climbs really just lend themselves to stronger people. Some climbs lend themselves better to taller, more, you know, stretched out people. And
but strength is something that's like a staple in your, because there's a difference between strength and explosive power in athletics, and they're specifically different, you know. But and then would you say that your nutrition has an impact on your performance as far as rock climbing?
I didn't realize it until I started learning about more about nutrition through bodybuilding. To tell you the truth, even though I was an athlete before 2 years ago, just eating, I thought I ate healthy and properly, but I never spent the time to really learn like I did now. Yeah. And it was amazing because I told you I was projecting this climb in 2018, and I was depleting myself before I scored Natural Olympia at that time and at the same time. And I just couldn't muster all the energy that I needed to get through it. 2 weeks later, after I finished Olympia and reincorporated carbs and rebalanced my diet back out, it just went like nothing. So
yeah you
and learn. I didn't realize how much your diet really played into it, but it does.
Well, I can share something with you, you know, and a lot of people don't know that the seven and a half years ago, I had three strokes that paralyzed me. I had three strokes in 3 weeks that paralyzed me. And for that to happen to me, Rupa, because of the fact that I've been an athlete all my life, you know, and in bodybuilding, which I'm telling people at this point in my life how to get in shape. And here I am having these stupid things. The doctors didn't even know. There was no reason as far as like the testing that they did. This is how powerful nutrition is. Well, you know, I never got a hernia from all the training that I did over the years. I trained for 15 or 20 years in the sport and never a hernia. I got a hernia from trying to rehab because I did my own rehab because I knew enough that I chose not to go to a physical therapist. Because after the first little consultation I had, it was very obvious to me that their goals for me were much different than mine. They wanted me to be functional, and I wanted to be 100%, which I got my, fortunately, I got my, oh, there you go. I thought I lost you. I got my
battery.
I recovered. But my doctor, so I got this hernia from trying to get my body to work again, especially my arms and arm. I was mostly on one side. So I get this hernia, and the doctor says, you got to fix the hernia. So, okay. And he said, but we have to do this cardiac clearance test for you now. Because you've had these strokes, the concern is when you go under anesthesia, if you have like a little small hole in your heart, because apparently people do, and they don't even know it, you know. But they said, when you go under anesthesia, that anesthesia can go through that hole in your heart and cause you to stroke out again, right? So I said, well, yeah, let's go ahead and check that. They did, and you know, everything was fine. But here's the thing that I learned about nutrition, how powerful it is. When I did this testing, I had them do everything, angina in the leg. I wanted to know exactly where I was at this point now after this had happened to me because the doctor said you shouldn't be in the hospital. Okay, so overall, I was 35% blocked. And I thought 35% overall blocked, I thought that was horrible. And he said, no, we don't even start, prescribing medication or addressing this till people are about 70% blocked, if you can believe that. And I thought, yeah, you know, I thought 35% was horrible. So what I did in that next year, I had the surgery and everything went fine. So of course, I go back every year and I get like these checkups just to make sure everything goes okay. It is. But I'm competitive that way. And I thought, I'm going to see what I can do to reverse heart disease by simply changing my diet. Not my training, because my training has been pretty consistent. I don't train for powerlifting. It's a fitness-based training program. And here's what I did. I went and I adjusted my diet. I did some intermittent fasting. I compartmentalized my calories. Monday, Tuesday through Thursday was a paleo style diet. I did an intermittent fast on Monday. And I had reasons for doing all that, you know, because a paleo diet is less inflammation because of the carbohydrates. You're not taking as many carbs as you would normally take. Anyway, and the carbs you do take, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so, and then on the weekend, I was carb loading. I just, because I like carb loading on the weekend. I always have. I like to play on the weekend and not think about my diet. I've always done it that way. I go back a year later, and the doctors took those same tests on me, and they said, remarkably, you reversed your 35% by another, I think it was 17%.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and they said, how the hell, yeah, how did you do that? And I, because, you know, interestingly enough, a lot of doctors really don't understand nutrition because, you know, less than 1% of their training is in that area. So I wasn't surprised about that. But they were just amazed because think of it this way. Only having 35% blockage is kind of like you having to lose maybe the last 5 pounds or so. It's difficult to reduce that compared to somebody who's got 70% block.
Right, yeah.
So they were just amazed. And that was a testament to how powerful your nutrition can be. If you understand macros and how they function in your body, there's different ways to compartmentalize all that kind of stuff to make them. You can weaponize your body with nutrition. There's no doubt about that. I mean, I learned that. It was amazing. Yeah. Okay, so here's, you know, I kind of wanted to finish up with, you were the, we had, as you know, we had this booth at the Natural Olympia, and we have people doing pull-ups. Well, you were the female champion with, I think it was what, 25? 27?
No, I did 27, yeah.
Unbelievable. 27, I've never seen any, well, hard enough for guys to do that. I mean, you'd be most of the guys. And so,
and that was on competition morning.
I guess while you're there, you just wanted to go do a few, hanging or pull-ups. That was amazing to see you do that. But what's gotten you into this one arm pull-up? Tell me about that now. Do they have competitions for that?
No, not that I know of. It was just to tell you the truth, pull-ups are big. That, you know, workout that a lot of climbers do, and I've always been able to do quite a few, but I've never had done a one arm pull up. And I thought to myself, and I like set, like you mentioned at the beginning, I actually love setting these ridiculously hard goals and then just trying to do them right. And yeah. So when I turned 43, I was like, I want to do a one arm pull up. This was October 15th, and I thought for some reason I was going to be able to do it by the end of the year, you know, before the end of the year. Well, that didn't work out. I was still like trying to also do a bikini comp and climb this route and all this other stuff. But I did do it. I trained, I researched, I tried a bunch of different training workouts. It took me 9 months, but I actually did from the dead hang, so not even with a kip into it. Yeah. From a full complete unlock into an engagement and pull. Both arms, it took me 9 months to train and get that one arm pull up.
Okay, so let me get this right. Now, when you say one arm, did you have your other hand?
No. No.
Oh, I see.
Well, like you'll have to see it on my Instagram page. I got a video up there. But yeah, from the full dead hang, so you're totally disengaged, to engaging using your lats, all the way to the engagement of the bicep with the pull up. Get your chin up over the bar. So
well, I tell you,
I did
what,
on rings and gymnastic rings.
Yeah,
just because the rotation felt a little bit better than a straight bar.
Yeah, yeah. I tell you what, if you don't connect with all those body parts, there's definitely no way you're going to do that. I mean, if you weren't connecting with the lat and was just relying on your bicep and, you know, some shoulder involvement, you would never do that. You have to have everything working there. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that some training of different, the whole chain done. So
that's amazing. You know, I hate to see what you're going to be like when you're 50 or 60. My goodness, I don't think there's going to be any stopping you. All you have to do is look. I think the lesson is this: keep setting ridiculous goals. You know, I heard this one time from a coach.
Why not?
But you know, you might as well shoot for the sky. And if you land on a mountain, what the heck, you know? And so I applaud you. I think that I'm really happy that you came on the show. I mean, you're amazing, and I learned a lot from you today, which, you know, I still like learning. I mean, I'm an old guy, but I still like learning. I like learning.
Never stop learning, right?
Yeah. Are you doing the personal training now as a full-time job?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Personal training. I teach yoga as well. So coach climbing.
when I got into this, because I came from a dairy background, you know, and I took a leap of faith. And when I got into this personal training, back when I got into it, Rupa, there was nobody doing it in my town. And so I had to kind of figure this out on my own. But the thing that was, that drove me and that I knew that was a factor in everything else that I did from that point forward was having what you have, and that is passion. And because that just, it changes the game. It changes the obstacles that you're going to face, because you're going to face obstacles in your life, whether or not, you know, it, but having that passion for what you're doing. And, you know, I get up every morning still at this age, and I'm as excited about going to work and doing the things that I do that I was when I started when I was 27 years old. And wow. It's been ever since I jumped into that, I've never worked a day in my life since then, you know. And I get that energy from you. And that was one of the reasons that I was excited about you coming on. So I really do appreciate you taking the time to come to the show and educating our audience, if for no other reason as to now about rock climbing. I mean, my gosh, I learned a whole bunch of stuff from your rock climbing. And continued success with your competing. And if you'd ever like to come back on the show one day and talk about some stuff that you're doing, I would love to have you back on the show.
Yeah, let's do it. It was really a great pleasure to be on the show with you, Leo. It was really nice to meet you. I hope you keep inspiring and teaching. So
I'll do my best. You're inspiring me now. I'm good for another few years, I can tell you that. Anyway. Awesome. All right, you have a good day. I'll see you again sometime, okay?
All right, thank you.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Serious Growth Podcast. For more episodes like the one you just listened to, subscribe to us on your mobile podcast app and leave us a review. If you'd like to reach out, you can find us online at seriousgrowth.com. Until next time, train smart and train hard.